Hey, Woman of Strength, this is Megan, your host here at the VBAC Link. We know that planning your VBAC can be full of surprises, but what diapers you choose for your VBAC baby shouldn't be one of them. That's why our team loves Coterie. Their diapers are made with clean and sustainable ingredients, something we know that is important to our community. And the best part is they hold up to 16 ounces of liquid for up to 12 hours of leak protection. Try them today and get 20% off your first order of $40 or more with code VBAC20 at checkout. That is VBAC20 at checkout. Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. Welcome to the show, everybody. We have our friend Abigail from California with us today. She's a 27-year-old stay-at-home mom with a 4-year-old daughter and a 7-month-old son. She experienced a very unfortunate, traumatic experience with her first, which really left her not really sure that she wanted any more kids. And she's going to dive more into her wild experience, but she had a COVID pregnancy. She had a lot of different stresses through the pregnancy, especially in the beginning, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, so many things with her first that really taught her a lot through that first. And then, like I said, kind of had a wild birth experience. And then the second time she ended up getting gestational diabetes again, but did a lot of different things to improve her outcome, like hiring a doula, getting a supportive provider, and all of that. So we are going to turn the time over to her in just one moment, but I do want to just quickly, in place of the review, share a couple tips for gestational diabetes. If you guys have not heard about it so far, check out Real Food for Gestational Diabetes from Lily Nichols. It's absolutely incredible. It's like less than 200 pages long. It's a fantastic read and filled with a lot of really great information and studies. She also talks about prenatals. So I wanted to remind everybody that we have a partnership with Needed, who we just love and adore. And we do have a promo code for 20% off. You can get your 20% off by using code VBAC20, VBAC20. Definitely check that out. And then we are going to be including a lot of things in our blog today, like third trimester ultrasounds, sizes of baby, gestational diabetes. So make sure to dive into the show notes later and check out what we got. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, my darling, I'm so excited for you to share your stories today. I feel like there's part of your story that I want to point out too before you get going. And that is like that sometimes you can plan the most ideal birth scenario, right? And I'm not going to talk about what this scenario is, but a lot of people are like, oh, do this, do this, do this. And sometimes you plan it and then your care falls short or something happens and plans change. So if you guys are listening, I just want you to like dive in. And as you're listening to Abigail share her stories, like listen to how sometimes things change and what she did and then what she did differently to have a different experience. So, okay, Abigail.
Hello. First of all, I just want to say I'm really happy to be here today. Thank you for
Me
having me.
too.
Yeah, I guess just let's just dive right in.
Yeah.
So first thing is I'm a stay-at-home mom, so my mom's out in the living room with my babies right now, and at this point my son is 7 months old and we're having a really good time over here. So I just want to start by saying that. But so basically to start with my story, I got pregnant for the first time in January of 2020, and everybody knows what else happened in 2020.
Yep.
So I think about 12 or 13 weeks pregnant when everything completely shifted and everything started to shut down. And there was a chance that I was going to get laid off of work, which I did end up getting laid off of work about a week later. So it was not a fun time. My husband and I had an apartment. We lived in a place we had just moved to. We had been there for about 3 years. And we had a roommate, and everything was totally fine. Everybody worked full time. I was working out regularly. Like, we had a pretty chill life, you know, go to the farmer's market on the weekend. And I was really excited when I found out I was pregnant. I was like, okay, yeah, we're gonna bring a baby into this. Let's do it. I love what we're doing. So, again, everything completely shut down and shifted. And our roommate decided he wanted his own space. So, he gave us a 30-day notice. We were stuck in a situation where they were raising our rent because our lease was up, so we would have had to like re-sign and it would have cost us more and everything. So we were looking at having to move because our roommate was moving out. It was all not a very fun time. So we decided to move back to where we're from and get rent a room from a family member and stay with them for the time being. And you know, they had some a little bit of extra space for us. We thought it would be totally fine and everything. So we moved when I was about 20 weeks pregnant. Up until that point, I had had regular OB care at just like a regular office. I had done all of like the blood work and everything and the ultrasounds and the anatomy scan and everything up until like 20 weeks. And when we moved, I decided I was like, okay, well, you know, I think I want to have the baby at home, especially now since, you know, pandemic. I don't really know that I really want to go to the hospital. When I wasn't sure that I wanted to do that to begin with, I grew up in a community where home birth was pretty normal. My mom had my younger brother at home. Several of my friends were born at home, their siblings, when we were younger. It was a pretty normal thing to me. So I reached out to a team of midwives and I talked to them and got everything set up, started doing appointments with them. They were coming over to my house fairly frequently. It was pretty nice doing the regular like blood pressure checks and like the urine samples with the little sticks and all of that stuff. When it came time for the gestational diabetes testing, I was like, okay, well, do this is something I have to do. Like, I didn't have my insurance set up at that point or anything because we had just moved. So I was like, I'd have to pay out of pocket for it. I'd have to go sit in some lab or office someplace again during COVID while I was pregnant. I was like, I don't know. Like, if I don't have to do it, I don't want to. I mean, if I have to, I will. Like, what are we doing here, you know? They're like, well, you're low risk. I mean, these are the risk factors. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to. You just have to sign this form. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll sign a form. It's easy enough. Totally skipped the gestational diabetes testing. That was on me, but it wasn't on me at the same time because I don't feel like I was given proper informed consent. There were a team of three midwives plus a student, so a total of four that I was seeing. One of the midwives ended up getting switched out at about that point. So it ended up being the students, the same original two, and then one newer one. Everybody was really nice. They were coming over and checking on me and doing all the things that I thought they were supposed to be doing, you know. I was not weighing myself. We did not have a scale. And again, they didn't tell me that it is important to make sure that you're not gaining too much weight at a time or anything like that. So what happened was I started gaining a lot of weight, but I didn't really realize like just how much weight I was actually gaining. I was like, oh, I'm pregnant, you know, I quit going to the gym. I can't even hardly do anything. It's hot out. It's summertime. I was pregnant from January to September, so the bigger I got, the hotter it got. And I didn't do much, so I was like, whatever, you know, I gained some weight. It's not a big deal. I was a pretty small person to start with, just for reference. I am 4'8" and I was 95 pounds when I got pregnant initially, so really small. It kind of just It started becoming concerning because towards the end of my pregnancy, towards like, I guess even not even the end, like the beginning of my third trimester, I started getting really swollen, like really swollen. My feet and my legs up to my knees, not just my feet, my calves and everything were pretty swollen. And towards the end of my pregnancy, I had swelling all the way up into my thighs. And I'm being told this is normal. I'm 23. I've never been pregnant before. I don't have any kind of support groups or anything going because it's COVID. Nobody wants to talk to anybody or do anything. It was a little frustrating for me because they're like, oh, just put your feet up, soak your feet. If I soaked my feet, they got more swollen. I was not taking proper care of myself either. I went from exercising and eating right and doing all of the things that you are supposed to do to sitting at home and eating a lot of fast food and not walking and really just like, I was not having a great time mentally either. We were living someplace I didn't want to be living. It was like all of it. And I didn't think too much of it. Again, I'm like, okay, well, I'm being told this is normal. I've gained some weight. It's fine. At one point, one of my urine tests that they did came back positive for glucose. And they were like, well, what'd you eat for breakfast? And when I told them, I was like, well, I had some waffles and I had some orange juice and whatever else I had had. They're like, oh, well, you just had some orange juice right before we got here. That's fine. It's like, okay. Didn't think to check it again, like, didn't think to do a second opinion or anything. At one point, towards the end of my pregnancy, I had a blood pressure reading that I checked myself at home with the little wrist cuff that was really elevated. It was the end of the day. I texted the midwife and I was like, hey, my blood pressure is really high. She was like, well, what'd you do today? And I told her, I was like, well, I didn't really do much. I ate this for lunch. I had some soda. She's like, okay, well, that's probably fine. Just rest and check it again in the morning. And when I checked it again in the morning, it was still relatively normal. So they didn't do anything. One of the midwives came over at one point and dropped off some herbs for me that they wanted me drinking, like some tea or something like that, because I was getting swollen. And I was standing outside talking to her, and she was like, oh my God, I can see your feet swelling up while we're standing here. You need to go back inside and put your feet up. And again, nobody thought anything of it. So, how four people missed all of this, I don't know. I feel kind of like the student may have been more concerned, but like didn't really like know how to say anything or anything. Just kind of like looking back, like the facial expressions she would give and things like that, So I go into labor right at 40 weeks. I am planning a home birth. Everything is set up for that. I've got the tub at my house. We've done like the home birthing class, like how to get everything set up, done all that. There was no backup plan in place. They did not suggest that I have one. And again, I did not know any better at the time. So I was told if there was some kind of emergency, I would go to this hospital. And that was as far as it went. I didn't have a backup bag ready. I didn't have a hospital bag ready. I didn't have like anything planned. There was no like, hey, this is what we watch out for. This is what you might go to the hospital for. So I go into labor at like 3 a.m. And honestly, contractions started and they were immediately painful, which like I've never done this before. I'm like, okay, well, maybe we're just starting out like harder than I thought. That's fine. Maybe there's not going to be early labor or whatever. So I labored for a couple hours. I was really uncomfortable. So I called the midwives. They came over. They checked. They were like, okay, well, you're only at 2 centimeters and this is seeming like early labor. And I'm like, this is really painful. I am not having a good time. This does not feel okay at all. They checked my blood pressure. My blood pressure was through the roof. So they waited a little bit and checked it again, and it was even higher the second time. So they're like, okay, well, this is out of our care. You got to go to the hospital now. And I'm like, what do you mean I got to go to the hospital? Like, that's not part of the plan here. We don't even have, like, that's not even a plan B or anything. So I, through tears and contractions and everything, I was having contractions maybe every 10 minutes or so. 5 to 10 minutes ish, somewhere around there. I don't remember exactly. I got a hospital bag ready and I got some clothes for the baby together and got some my phone charger and my toothbrush and everything. And we headed to the hospital. I sat in triage by myself for 4 hours because they did not have a bed available for me. They would not let my husband into triage with me because it was COVID. And the entire time, I was so uncomfortable. They had me immediately start on blood pressure medication to try to get my blood pressure down. And they started me on magnesium. And they told me that the magnesium was going to make me feel yucky, which is the biggest lie I have ever been told by a nurse. And I don't know if she just never had it or what, but I felt like you have like the worst flu you've ever had. Like my whole body hurt. It made everything feel worse. I felt groggy. I felt sick. It was not fun at all. So at that point, it's like, I think I got to the hospital about 11 a.m. They didn't get me into a room until like 3 or 4 that night. So at that point, I've been in labor for like 12 hours. I was still hardly dilated. The doctors, initially when I got there, said, "Your notes say you're only 2 centimeters. Why are you here?" And I was like, "Okay, I don't know. I was told to be here. I was told that like my blood pressure's high or whatever. I don't know. I don't want to be here." So they did all the things, they ran all the tests, and the doctor comes back in and she says, "You are severely preeclamptic. Why did you not get here sooner?"
So why are you here? And okay, why weren't you here sooner?
Yeah. So I was like, I'm so confused. I don't want to be here. I'm freaking out. I'm like stressing hardcore. My blood pressure went down for a little bit, but it stayed really, really, really high. They put me on fluids and everything, which of course did not help the swelling. So they finally get me into a room and everything, and things are moving along. It's going fine. I was okay for a little bit. And then it got to the point where, like, my legs were so swollen that I felt like they were going to pop. Like, my legs felt like balloons that were going to explode. And they were trying to put compression boots on me and stuff in the bed. And every time I was having a contraction, I was trying to get up and get moving because it felt better to get up and move. So they were taking the boots on and off. It was miserable. So after, I think, 28 hours of labor at that point, I was like, okay, I would like an epidural, please. I really don't want to have to get out of bed. I can't do this. I want my legs up. I don't want any part of this. So they got me an epidural. I don't know exactly how many centimeters I was at that point, but not very, like, things had not moved very far in 28 hours. The doctor kept pushing to try to break my water, and I kept telling her, "No, thank you. I don't want that. It will break on its own. I would like to take a nap." So I took a nap. My water did break on its own, so that was nice. The water was clear. Everything was fine. We're still moving. I have an epidural. It's working great. I'm laying in bed. Blood pressure is still high, swelling still bad, but other than that, everything's maintaining. We're fine. Continue laboring for a while. I was getting checked pretty frequently because the doctors were like uncomfortable with the situation. And like, again, looking back, I realized why they would be uncomfortable with the situation, you know? So they kept checking me and trying to like want to do stuff. I was on Pitocin at that point. They had started it at some point, I think shortly before I got the epidural. So I had been on that for a while. It went from like being okay to all of a sudden I was not okay. And I don't remember exactly what hour that happened between like somewhere between probably around like 36, I want to say ish. I was dealing with some stressful stuff with some family members. I was not having a good time. My phone kept going off. I was just trying to rest. It was a miserable time. And they said that I was getting a fever all of a sudden. They're like, "You're getting a fever. We're gonna see what we're gonna do." They tried to give me some Tylenol and stuff to bring it down. They tried putting a cool rag on my face. They were trying to get me to eat ice. At that point, they had completely stopped letting me eat because initially when I got there, they were letting me eat a little bit. But that stopped and they wouldn't let me drink anything. So they were giving me like ice chips and stuff. I started getting to the point where I was like feeling really sick, like more sick than I had already felt. They checked me again, and depending on which doctor did it, I was at like a 6 or a 7 still. So they finally called it and they were like, "You have an infection. You are not doing okay. This is not okay. You need to have a C-section now." And crying, I was like, okay, fine, that's not what I want, but let's go. So they prepped me for the OR, got everything moving, got me back. By the time I got in there, it had been like 38 hours, and I had had an epidural for about 12 of those hours, I guess. So at that point, it wasn't working super well anymore. It was not working well enough that they could have done the C-section. So they put in a spinal as well. So I had both of those done. And to my understanding, they're two different pokes. So again, I didn't want either initially, and I got both. So not thrilled about that. But I'm laying on the operating table, and I was so thirsty, and they wouldn't give me anything to drink, and they kept giving me this moist sponge, and they said I couldn't suck on the sponge, I could moisten my mouth with it. And they gave me some stuff to drink that said it was going to make it so I didn't throw up. And I wasn't nauseous at all the entire time. I had not thrown up at any point at this point at all. So I was like, I don't want this. I don't need it. The stuff that they gave me tasted awful, and they wouldn't give me anything to rinse it down. So my mouth is dry. I'm like gagging from how dry my mouth is, and the stuff tastes bad. And they have me like strapped to the table, and my arms are down, and I just laid there crying. And the C-section went fine. They got my baby out. She was okay. She was 7 pounds, 12 ounces. And for somebody who's my size, I was like, wow, that's a really big baby. That's kind of surprising. Okay. So they get me sewn up and everything. They let me look at my placenta, and it was like four times the size of any placenta I have ever seen. It was like, I mean, like dinner plate size, but like, I mean, like a couple inches thick,
Thick. Oh.
really thick. I was like, okay, well, that's really weird. So they move me and the baby to recovery. My husband's there with me. Everything's okay. Everything's calmed down. I'm like, we're okay now. We got this. It's fine. And then all of a sudden, the nurse is like, I don't like your bleeding. And this is the same nurse I had had now for like 2 or 3 nights, because at that point, I had been in labor for 40 hours, 46 hours, excuse me, 46 hours. It was 46 hours by the time they took my baby out. I started labor initially on the 28th at 3 a.m., and my baby was born on the 30th at 1 a.m. So almost a full 2 days. So she's like, I don't like your bleeding. I'm like, okay, I'm really out of it. I'm not really paying attention. I'm trying to nurse my baby. I can hardly move. I'm uncomfortable. And next thing I know, there's like more people coming in, more doctors coming in, more nurses coming in. They take the baby from me. They hand the baby to my husband, and they shove them out. And I'm just screaming, please don't give my baby formula, because I don't know what's going on. I don't know where they're taking her. I was trying to nurse her, and I'm like so confused now. Next thing I know, there's like 10 people surrounding my bed. It's like three doctors and like seven nurses. I had one IV in my hand initially, or my arm, or wherever they had put it. So next thing I know, I have two more IVs. There was one in my other arm and then in my other hand. They put some pills up my backside, and I'm like so confused what's going on at this point. I'm still numb from everything, from the spinal and the epidural and everything. So I can't feel what's going on. And she's pushing on my belly, and she's changing the pads under me. Everyone's freaking out. And like,
Wow.
I'm fading in and out of consciousness. I don't know what's happening. My husband's freaking out. My blood pressure had dropped to like 25 over 15, I think.
Whoa.
So I was like about to die. They finally got me stable. I don't really know what happened exactly. All I know is next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in the ICU. They wouldn't let my husband come see me. They wouldn't let me see my baby. I'm with a bunch of like COVID patients and everything. And they gave me two or three blood transfusions, and they put a balloon in my uterus to apply counter pressure so that it would stop bleeding. And they had like a bucket like attached to it, and like I'm watching them just empty buckets of my blood. And it was so scary. And I'm laying in the ICU by myself, and the balloon in my uterus hurt so bad, like so bad. So I didn't end up moving, and I laid there for the rest of that night, the entire next day, the whole next night, and then I think they moved me the next day. So it was like a night and a half plus like a whole day that I just laid there by myself.
Wow.
And
So scary.
It was so scary. And the nurses came in at one point and like were like trying to, I think it was lactation consultant maybe, and like they were trying to get me to pump and everything. And I think I pumped once or twice, but like I was not up for doing anything. So like if they didn't come in and set me up, like I didn't really do it. So I finally get the balloon taken out because that was like what I kept begging for. I was like, please take this out. It hurts so bad. The pain medications like aren't helping. I didn't want to give the pumped milk to my baby as it is because like I was on so many pain medications and so many antibiotics and everything else. So I get the balloon out finally, and I think they took it out that night and then they moved me the next day. So they moved me to high risk maternity and they let me take a shower and eat some food and stuff before they brought my baby back from the nursery because she was fine in the nursery. So that was kind of nice to be able to just like take a shower and like wash up. Like I was so covered in blood and everything. And like I got to look at my C-section scar and everything for the first time. And I realized I had had a reaction to the tape that was on it and stuff too. So like my skin all around it was all irritated. All up and down my arms had been completely poked and prodded, like because they were checking my blood every like 4 hours because of the infection and stuff. And depending on like the lab tech's skill and like everything, it was not going well for some of them. They kept having to poke me, and the IVs weren't working for them to take blood from or something like that. So they just kept having to poke me more. And again, I was having a reaction to some of the tape. So, like, my whole arms are just completely raw and everything. Still very swollen. Very, very, very swollen still. So they had like compression socks and stuff on at this point, not like boots at least. They finally bring my baby to me. And then we ended up spending 3 days in high risk maternity. So, total, that was 2 days in labor, almost 2 days in the ICU, and 3 days in high risk maternity. Total, I spent 7 days in the hospital. I get home, and they had me on blood pressure medication for a few weeks until I think like my 6 week appointment when I followed up. And then my blood pressure was back to normal. So, I was able to quit taking the blood pressure medication and stuff. I dropped like 30 pounds instantly because it was just like all of the swelling that just like came off. I had still gained a lot of weight, but it was like a huge chunk of it was just swelling, which is so bad. So it was finally over and like I was settled and I'm in bed with my baby. And then the family member we were living with decided that they didn't want us living there anymore. So at 3 weeks postpartum, we had to move, and I had only been home from the hospital for like 2 weeks at that point. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't want to be around the situation. My husband was dealing with it. So I ended up going on a road trip with my grandma to go stay with a different family member out of state just to make sure that like my baby wasn't anywhere near anything that was going on. So 3 weeks after a C-section and almost dying, I was driving and doing a whole bunch of other stuff, going out and walking around and trying to put jeans on. And I couldn't figure out why like my clothes didn't fit. Like I didn't realize like just how big I had gotten. And it was not a fun time. So I spent 5 days out of town and then moved into a different family member's house temporarily, where I was completely isolated by the people that I was living with, and they did not understand what I was going through. And they thought that I was choosing to be difficult intentionally. So that created additional problems. I ended up getting pretty bad postpartum depression, which is really not a surprise. I still didn't understand what had happened to me. I still didn't understand why I had almost died. I still didn't understand. Like, I didn't know if I had done something wrong. I didn't know, like, what was going on, you know? And I spent a lot of time really upset over the fact that like everything went wrong and I didn't know why. And then like life was falling apart around me and I was not doing okay. So turned into really bad postpartum depression pretty quickly. My husband and I get our own apartment when my baby was like 4 months old. So again, I'm like, okay, things are finally gonna settle. It's gonna be okay now. And it did not settle. It's just like my depression just got worse. And I didn't even know what to do. I was eating a lot because I was like, well, I'm breastfeeding and like and all that, I need to eat. But I basically just sat at home and didn't do anything but eat and nurse my baby. And I was very thankful that I was able to successfully breastfeed after everything that had happened to me. All of the nurses at the hospital were all very surprised about that and stuff.
Yeah, with the amount of blood loss and everything, like it's pretty rare. Pretty
Yeah.
rare. Yeah.
So, yeah, I never ended up giving my baby a bottle or anything because I was so scared that, like, if I tried to give her a bottle or something, that, like, it would mess up my breastfeeding. And that was the only thing that had gone right. So I was doing okay for a little while, I thought, but, like, it was not okay. I was really not okay. I was very, very sad. I was fully convinced for a period of time that they should have let me die at the hospital. I was fully convinced that the doctors did me a disservice by, like, trying so hard to save me.
So sorry.
Yeah. So I finally started therapy and I started trying to get up and do more and not eat so much and get moving. I think finally, around the time my daughter was a year or a year and a half, I started to feel a little bit better and things slowly did start to get a little better for me. But I was fully convinced that I did not want more kids. Like, I was like, I am never going through that again. I do not want another C-section. I don't know what happened to me. So obviously, I would have to have another C-section because we don't even know what went wrong, you know? It took me until my daughter was almost three. She was like about to be three when all of a sudden my mindset kind of shifted. And I was like, getting mad at myself for feeling like I wanted another baby because I was like, I don't want another baby. Of course, I don't want another baby. I've made that very clear. Like, we got rid of all the baby stuff. I told everybody I wasn't having more. Like, what is wrong with me? I am fighting internally with myself because I want another baby, but I do not want another baby. This is insane. So I kept it all to myself. I didn't say anything. And all of a sudden, my husband's like, I think we should have another baby. And I was like, what are you talking about? You're insane. And he's like, no, I think we should have another baby. And I was like, oh, you shouldn't have said that because I want another baby.
Yeah. I've been actually thinking the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Choosing the right diaper is kind of like choosing the right VBAC supportive provider. It's all about trust, reliability, and knowing you're in good hands. That's why our team at the VBAC Link loves Coterie diapers. They're designed to hold up to 16 ounces of liquid, providing up to 12 hours of leak protection, and are made of hypoallergenic, clean materials you can feel good about. One of our team members, Lily, shares about how she's been using Coterie since she had her C-section baby. And she says she tried a few brands but experienced significantly fewer leaks with Coterie. It was a no-brainer choice to use them again with her VBAC baby. It's things like this and fewer leaks that make a big difference in our parenting journey. Use code VBAC20 to save 20% off your first order of $40 or more and give them a try. That's VBAC20 at checkout. Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today.
So I was pretty surprised I got pregnant right away. Literally, like within a couple weeks, I was pregnant. So it was a good thing and a bad thing because it didn't give me a chance to overthink it. But also, like, it was like, oh no, I don't even have a chance to think about this. This is now definitely what's happening. So I started out going to the doctor like right at 5 weeks. They started doing ultrasounds right at 5 weeks. Like, they were checking me for everything, every time, all the time. And I had so much anxiety. And I made that very clear to them. And I think that that's part of the reason that they checked everything all the time and were trying to be more reassuring. Like, they did ultrasounds at almost every appointment, which most people don't even get an ultrasound until like 12 or 20 weeks or whatever.
And
So
then
the
that's
fact that
the
I had,
only one.
yeah. I had like four of them before I even went for my anatomy scan.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were trying to watch everything and make sure everything was fine too, because again, they didn't do my care last time. This OB place did my follow-up care afterwards. So they were, I mean, they saw the aftermath of everything and they were concerned, you know, and stuff. So that's what we were dealing with. And I was dealing with some nausea. So they gave me some pills for that. And come to find out, one of the side effects of one of the medications they gave me was anxiety. So I was fighting a losing battle with myself because I was taking these pills for the nausea. And like I wasn't eating because I was anxious, and I wasn't eating because I was nauseous. And then I was getting more anxious. And it was a rough first like 20 weeks, I would say. And then I did start feeling better, thankfully. So I was able to start eating and stuff again. And as soon as I felt better, I started eating like ice cream and all the things that I wanted and all of that. And it was fine. I was doing fine. I was doing all my appointments and stuff. And then it comes up for my gestational diabetes testing. And the doctor says, you need to do this. And immediately I was like, yes, please. Like, I need to do that because that's one of the things I didn't do last time. And like, I need to do everything to make sure I'm good. I need to backtrack a minute. I'm so sorry. So, my first intake appointment at 5 weeks when I met with one of the, they're nurses, but it's like not the nurse that actually like checks you in and stuff. They have a little office and everything at the OB's office, and they check in and they ask like, do you have transportation to your appointments? Do you need help with anything? Do you have access to food? Like, are you in a safe relationship? You know, all those types of things. They check in. And I let them know what had happened previously with me. And she was like, oh, well, then you might be interested in this. This is something new your insurance covers. You could get a doula if you wanted, since it sounds like you wanted to have a more natural experience last time.
That's
And
awesome.
immediately I was like, hell yeah, let's do that. I didn't have a doula last time. Again, last time was COVID. I was already trying to pay for the midwives. So like it wasn't something I thought about. One, because I thought I was having a home birth with a couple of midwives. I didn't think that I needed a doula. Also, I didn't fully understand what they were, like the actual like extent of the benefits of them. So I was like, yeah, totally. So first thing I did when I got home was call, and they're like, yeah, we take your insurance, we can get you set up, we're taking new clients, let's get you in for an appointment. So I started seeing the doula sometime in my first trimester. I don't remember exactly when, but I remember I pulled up at the office and I got out and I was like, this can't be right. This is too nice. There's no way my insurance covers this. And I was shocked at the care I received from my doula service. I'm just gonna go ahead and give them a quick shout out just because they are amazing. But it's Haven for Birth in Sacramento, California, and they do amazing work for a lot of different things. I still attend lactation meetings and stuff with them monthly.
That's awesome.
And like it's such a great team of people. But I got the doulas that they set up for me, because there's two of them. You have like a main one and a backup one. My main doula's name was Heidi, and the backup doula's name was Francine, and they were both so sweet and wonderful. Heidi has been doing doula work for a good amount of time. She owns a chiropractic business, and Haven is all like, it's she's like the main one, and she's the one that's dealt with like higher risk pregnancies and things like that. So she was like my main source of support. And throughout everything, I mean, anything, I would text her if I needed something. And she was so reassuring. And she was like, yep, you can totally have a VBAC if that's what you want to do. And I was like, really, I can do that. Okay, I'm going to talk to the OB about it. The OB was like, yeah, it's completely up to you. As long as you're doing fine and we watch everything, that's fine. And I really did feel like they were supportive. It wasn't like a, well, if you're okay, then you can. It was like, both of the OBs that I had seen, one of them was a guy and one of them was a girl, and both of them were like, yeah, as long as we keep everything in check, you're totally fine. Like, I don't see why you couldn't. So I started to feel a little more confident in that. I had a lot of anxiety about it, and for a couple weeks I did kind of contemplate scheduling a C-section just to ease my own anxieties, but I didn't feel right with that choice. I really didn't. I was like, I need to try. It was tough though, because I was like, I feel like I don't know how I'm gonna deal with the feelings of like trying and not succeeding. So that was kind of like the struggle of like, I do I wanna just have a C-section that way, like I get what I want no matter what. But I didn't feel like I wanted to do that. So I worked really, really, really hard to get my V back is basically what ended up happening. So back to where I was, I get my gestational diabetes testing done, and the first like hour one comes back really high, and I'm like, okay, that's concerning. Text my doula about it. She's like, it's okay. You're gonna do the 3 hour one. You'll probably pass the 3 hour one, but even if you don't, it'll be fine. So failed the 3 hour one really bad. It was my fasting number was fine, but the rest of the numbers were very elevated, like not even just a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is all starting to make sense. I had a lot of anxiety initially about like what I could eat and can't eat because I didn't feel the greatest and I was letting myself eat what sounded good to make sure that I was eating. So it was a rough week initially when I got that. And then it took them a minute to get me the referral in for the program, the Sweet Success program, where I was actually able to talk to nurses and dietitians there. And once I finally got in with them, I met with them a few times throughout the end of my pregnancy. I did feel very supported by them. They were very nice. The dietitian was willing to meet with me one-on-one instead of in a group setting because I was having issues with eating and like not wanting to eat and feeling very concerned that like I was going to hurt myself or hurt the baby and like I needed they did a very good job making sure that I was cared for. So we completely changed up my diet. I started walking after every meal. I started checking my blood sugar 4 times a day. So first thing in the morning and then after breakfast, after lunch, after dinner, I basically immediately after eating would get up and do the dishes or clean up the food I had made or pick up the house or start some laundry or something so that I was getting up and moving. So only a couple times, there was only once or twice where my blood sugar numbers were like higher than they really wanted by more than like a point or two. So I did a really good job keeping those in check with what I was doing and watching what I was eating very closely and monitoring my portion sizes and realizing what I could and couldn't eat. Once I got to the point of like 36 or 37 weeks or whatever, where they're like, okay, well, this is kind of the plateau. Like, it's not going to get worse than this. And I realized I was able to keep it under control or some and things like that. I would let myself have like a couple bites of a cookie here and there. And it wouldn't spike my blood sugar or anything because I was doing everything I needed. And that made me feel really nice because I was able to eat a little bit of the stuff I liked, you know, as long as I was within reason. We met with the doula multiple times. She came over and did a home visit at 37 weeks. I had been having Braxton Hicks contractions from the time I was 19 weeks because we got COVID, we got RSV, and we got a cold. We got a cold, we got COVID, and we got RSV.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that was the whole first half of my pregnancy, along with dealing with nausea and everything else. I found out I was pregnant at the beginning of September. We got a cold in October. I got COVID in November. And then December, we got RSV. And my daughter, who was 3 at that point, spent 5 days in the hospital. So I spent 5 days in the hospital right next to her dealing with RSV while I was pregnant. And I feel like the coughing kind of like kickstarted like Braxton Hicks contractions almost. Because at that point, I started having them pretty regularly. And from 19 weeks on, I had tightenings all the time. Some days they would be worse than others, but like because I was so active, it definitely felt. I never got diagnosed with like irritable uterus or anything, but I feel like that's definitely what it was because it would get really irritable when I would do pretty much anything and I was doing things all the time. So 35 weeks, though, my contractions started getting like fairly intense-ish. They weren't painful at all, but it was like every 3 to 5 minutes I was contracting. So I drove myself to the hospital. I was like, I'm fine. I'm not concerned. I didn't bother my husband or my doula or anything. I let her know I was going, but I was like, you're not. Don't worry about it. They hooked me up. They checked me. They everything. They were like, well, you're hydrated. We don't need to give you fluids or anything. They were like, how are you feeling? You got to tell us if these hurt or not because we can see them on the monitor, but you have to tell us how you're feeling. I was like, I just feel annoyed. This just feels annoying. They just keep tightening up and it's uncomfortable when they do, but nothing hurts. I'm annoyed. They're like, okay, well, let's check you. I was still like completely closed, no baby coming down. So they gave me a single pill to stop them and sent me home. And it worked. It slowed them down for the rest of the night. And then they picked back up to their normal, here and there the next day. But for the next couple weeks, I kept it fairly, I tried to keep it easy. If I noticed I was starting to have more of them, I would try to go lay down. I was able to have my baby shower at 36 weeks, which was wonderful because I had not had a baby shower for my first baby because of COVID. And I feel like 36 weeks was almost kind of pushing it because my family had asked if we wanted to have it later to have somebody else be able to join us. And I was like, no, please don't push it later. I don't trust that. It's like I knew that he was going to come just a little early, but I was doing all of the things and like still having the regular Braxton Hicks contractions and everything. They were doing multiple growth scans on my baby because he started measuring slightly small at like 28 weeks, I think. At his 20-week scan, they noted that his kidneys were slightly enlarged. So they wanted to follow up on that. So they followed up on that at 28 weeks. His kidneys were completely fine. We never had like another incident with that or anything, but they noticed he was measuring a little smaller. So they started doing regular checks. By the end of my pregnancy, I was having a growth scan every week. So they went from like, let's check you in 6 weeks, let's check you in 4 weeks, let's check you in 2 weeks, come on, let's check you in another week.
Wow.
So they noticed he was measuring small and he continued measuring small. I
Like
think
regressing or was staying on his own growth pattern, but small.
he was growing, but not a lot.
Okay. Yeah. So
Yeah.
kind of staying on
So
his own pattern.
they didn't want him to drop below the 10th percent. And if they did, they were going to be concerned. He did get right to like the 10th, 9th, or 10th percent. So they did start to get a little concerned. They labeled him IUGR and they were doing non-stress tests on me twice a week. So basically, by the end of my pregnancy, I was seeing the OB. The place for the non-stress tests, the gestational diabetes program, the place for the ultrasounds and growth scans, a therapist, a hematologist, because I ended up having to have iron infusions and B12 injections, and the doula's office. So 7 places.
Oh.
And almost all of them wanted to see me every week.
Well.
So I was running around super active towards the end of my pregnancy. Still taking my daughter out and doing all of the things with her as well. I noticed after my baby shower at 36 weeks that my feet were just a little puffy. And I was like, huh, that's funny. And it hit me all of a sudden. I was like, my toes are kind of pudgy. I'm 36, almost 37 weeks pregnant. And this is the most swollen I have got. It was not up my legs, it was not even in my whole feet. It was like my toes and the top of my feet, not even my ankles, were like the tiniest bit puffy. And I had like this moment of clarity where I was like, how did nobody notice that something was so wrong with me? I was shocked because I'm looking at myself and I'm like, I had gained a total by the end of my pregnancy with my son of like 25 pounds, and that was it. And with my daughter, by the end of it, I had gained 70 pounds.
Oh.
So again, how did nobody notice? I am shook. So I thought on that for a long time. I'll come back to that, but I thought on that for so long. And I ended up emailing the midwives that had provided me care, and I was having a day. I went off on multiple people that day. I was not having it. And I emailed them and I sent them like a 4-paragraph email about how they let me down. They should have known better. Somebody should have noticed something was wrong. They should have asked for a second opinion. It was absolutely ridiculous. I was shook that they didn't push harder for gestational diabetes testing, all of the things. Because clearly at this point, I've realized my blood sugars being in control has made all of the difference. So not knowing, you can't do what you need to do, which is why I'm such a big advocate for informed consent and gestational diabetes testing. I know sometimes I see people like saying that they want to skip it because they're fine. I had zero of the actual risk factors and I still had it. So just putting that out there, that's kind of my main thing for this is definitely get checked and stay active and watch your blood sugars because it's a really, really serious thing. I literally almost died. But my son was, sorry, I keep jumping around. My son was measuring small. So they started doing all the tests and everything, and they couldn't find anything wrong. They were like, your cord Dopplers look great. Blood flow looks great. He is measuring, like, nothing specifically is measuring small. Like, his head's not measuring smaller than the rest of him or anything. He was very, very, very low in my pelvis. I mean, like, I was waddling from like 32 weeks on. He was low the entire time. I could feel him moving regularly. He was super active. I felt confident in myself. I felt safe. I felt good. They were telling me he was fine. Everything was looking fine. My fluid levels were good. My non-stress tests were always good. They make you sit for a minimum of 20 minutes. And if they don't see what they need to see in 20 minutes, then you have to stay longer. And I never had to stay longer than 20 minutes. It was always in and out. He was always moving. His heart rate was always good. So when they started mentioning induction at like 37 weeks, I was like, I don't want to be induced. I don't, there's really no reason. They're like, well, he's measuring small. Your baby last time was so much bigger. He's measuring so small. This is such a concern. And I was like, but I think there was something wrong with my baby and me last time. I don't think she should have been that big for me. I think that was the problem. And I tried explaining that to them, that I think that they had it backwards. Like, they should have been concerned about how big my last baby was because they didn't check her blood sugars in the hospital or anything because they didn't know to check it, you know? But everything was going fine. I was feeling fine. I was having pretty regular Braxton Hicks still. So I was convinced I was going to have him early. And I told them that. I will have him early, and you're not going to have to induce me. I promise you, you're not going to have to induce me. And I told the doula that I had promised the doctors and the specialists that I was not going to have to be induced. So she was on my side. She was like, okay, well, you know, we can try like some midwife's brew if we get to that point or something. Like, we'll talk about it. Didn't end up getting to that point, thankfully. But I had another scan at 37 weeks, and I'm at 36 and 37 weeks. And at 37 weeks, the doctor was like, okay, well, I specifically want to see you next week. I want you to come out to my other office next week because I specifically want to see you. I don't want you to see one of the other doctors. I want to follow up with you. And I was like, okay, fine. I'll drive to Roseville. No problem. Sure. It's like not that much further than the office I had been going to. And I didn't get that far. I went into labor at 37 and 6. It had been a normal day. I had taken my daughter to the jumpy place and I gone to the grocery store. I messed up when I went to the grocery store in the jumpy place and I parked too far out and I didn't think it through. I parked by the jumpy door, not the grocery door. So walking in was super close, but then I had to walk all the way back carrying my groceries because the carts didn't go out that part or anything. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so heavy. I'm still having Braxton Hicks the whole time. I'm feeling fine. I haven't had any kind of like no mucus plug activity, none of that. No swelling in my feet or legs. My blood pressure's been good. I checked it regularly. My blood sugar's been good. I had checked it regularly. And I get home and I'm like, man, I'm tired. And I got up and kept doing laundry and stuff. And then my husband gets home from work and he's like, hey, you want to go out to dinner? We could walk up to the restaurant up the street. I'm like, yeah, it's a beautiful day out. You know, it's the beginning of May. It's wonderful. Let's walk to dinner. That sounds like a great idea. So it's a 3-minute walk from my house to the restaurant. I'm not kidding. And about halfway there, I stopped and I was like, oh, well, that one was a little more uncomfortable than they've been. Okay, I actually felt that. And it kind of just felt like a bad period cramp, but like also tightening with the Braxton Hicks at the same time. I was like, I'm fine. Kept walking. We get to dinner, and I notice at that point I'm having mild contractions about every 10 minutes. I eat my food. I had sushi, and I know that rice spikes my blood sugar, so I tried not to eat too much of it. But like, I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm gonna have them. I'm just gonna make sure that I eat. So I ate all my dinner. We walked back home. Still, about every 10 or 12 minutes, I was having like mild contractions. Went about the evening as normal, put my daughter to bed, all that stuff. I took a shower. My husband and I were watching some TV. I was kind of bouncing on the ball. I wasn't really telling my husband that I was like super uncomfortable at that point yet. And it kind of hit all of a sudden, it's like 11 p.m. So at this point, it's like 6 p.m. is when I felt the first like slightly uncomfortable contraction. It's now 11 p.m. and I'm like, okay, this is actually starting to get like a little more uncomfortable. I got up and I paced around the living room, and my husband was like, uh-oh, we should probably go to bed. Yeah, we should probably go to bed. That's a good idea. So we went to bed and I did not sleep. I think I slept for about 7 minutes because at that point it went to like 7 minutes, not 10 minutes. And I started timing them on my phone. I texted my doula. I made sure I had all my stuff ready just to be safe, made sure the house was picked up. I tried to sleep. I let the doula know what was going on. She says, don't worry about timing. I'm just trying to get some rest. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not trying to time them, but every time I have one, I wake up and I see the clock. So, like, this is happening. She's like, okay, well, I'll start getting up and I'll be ready to head over if you need me. I want you to go take a shower. It took me a good 45 minutes, half hour, or something like that, to actually get from just like hanging out around my house to getting in the shower because I started shaking really bad and I was starting to have contractions like pretty quick together. They started getting closer and closer together. My husband ended up texting her at that point, like, hey, she's in the shower. I think contractions are getting like closer together. They're like 2 minutes apart at this point. You should probably head over. So she gets here pretty quickly. My daughter's still asleep. At that point, the doula's like, yeah, I think you're probably in active labor. We should probably start thinking about heading to the hospital. I'm only 10 minutes from the hospital, but my daughter still needed to get picked up. I needed to get my bag in the car. It's a process. So called family, got my daughter picked up. She had not heard anything at that point, hadn't even noticed I was in labor. I wasn't being like necessarily loud, but I wasn't also being like super quiet or anything. So she gets picked up. She's mad she's awake. It's like 2 a.m. and we get ready to go. And by the time we get down the stairs, because I live in an upstairs apartment, so I'd been pacing like the hall upstairs and my apartment and everything. I was super afraid my water is going to break in the car. So I put on a Depends because I was like, I'm not going to have to clean that up later because I'll be the one cleaning it up later and I don't want to have to deal with that. My doula is like, Chris, get her a bag in case she throws up in the car. Let's go. She tried checking my blood pressure, but like I kept moving and stuff. So we couldn't get an accurate reading, which made me that much more anxious because I was so afraid that by the time I got there, everything was going to go bad. I'd like convinced myself that it was fine, but there was like this nagging voice in my head that was like, no, everything went wrong last time. So surely you are going to die this time. And I was fighting with that. I was like, nope, I'm fine. Everything's been fine. They're aware. They're going to have blood on deck for me. It's going to be okay. I got this. So I get to the hospital. It's 3 in the morning. It's fairly quiet. We park in the parking garage, which is across the street. We walk through the parking garage, take the elevator, take the walk bridge across, get into the hospital, check in with security and everything. And they're like, oh, sweetie, do you want a wheelchair? And my doula is like, no, it's okay. She's fine. She's going to walk. And I'm like, yeah. Okay, Heidi, sure. That sounds like a great idea. I mean, that's what she's there for, you know? So it's fine that I kept walking, honestly, because we had to walk from one side of the hospital to the elevator. To take the a special elevator that goes up to the 6th floor. So we're about halfway to the elevator, and I'm like, oh, I think my water just broke. So my water broke walking into the hospital, which was, just that much more convenient. So we get in, get checked in and triage. The nurse is so nice, and she was like, it's okay if you want to give me a hug, because they wouldn't let my husband or my doula in at first. And I gave the nurse a hug. And she was so nice. And they're like, we need a urine sample. And at that point, basically from the time labor started, I was like, I couldn't pee. And that was an issue. So they're like, don't worry about it. It's fine. Let's get you back on the bed. Let's check you. Let's see how you're doing. They said I was at like a 4 or a 5, depending on who checked and who assessed. They asked me about pain medication and stuff. And I was like, not right at this time. I'll get back to you. I'm doing okay. Contractions are about every 2 or 3 minutes at this point. My water had broken on the way in. They tried doing one of the little swabs to check to make sure it was my water and not just that you had peed. And the nurse was like, I'm not even going to send this in. It's fine. I know that's your water. So they got me into a room pretty quickly. By the time I got into a room, I was like, I would like some pain medication, please. And at that point, they're like, okay, well, do you want an epidural? Do you want IV medication? And I remembered when I was in labor with my daughter, the nurse had initially offered me what was called a walking epidural. And so I asked, Because I remember declining that with my daughter. I was like, no, I don't want to do any more walking. That's the point. I don't want walking. No walking. But this time I was like, that actually sounds like I want to know more about that. So I asked the nurse and everything about it. And she's like, well, it's still an epidural. It's put in your back the same. It's just different medication. It's like lower doses or different medication or whatever it is. So it's gonna provide some pain relief, but you're not gonna be numb. You're still gonna feel everything. And I was like, honestly, that's what I would really like. That sounds like it's a really good idea. I was having a very hard time taking a deep breath. I was having a very hard time relaxing because I was so afraid that something was going to go wrong. And at that point, my blood pressure was fantastic. Everything had been normal. No protein in my urine, no swelling, no high blood sugars, nothing. So I was like, okay, this is going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. I felt a little weird about asking for pain medication because I was adamant that this time I was going to do it without it. But they call the anesthesiologist. He comes in and he says, okay, so you sure you want the walking epidural? Because that's definitely not going to get you where you want to be pain wise. And I was a little ticked off, but I was like, just get me what I asked for, please. If I change my mind, I'll tell you. And that's the thing. If you change your mind, all they have to do is switch up your medication. It's not continuous with what I got. It's just like a bolus of medication. And the little thing is just kind of taped to your back. So you're not actually hooked up to any medication or anything. But if I wanted to be, all they have to do is hook it up. So I'm like, I'm fine. I don't need that. Thanks, dude. They get me that and they made me stay in bed for the first hour just to make sure that I was okay. My blood pressure was fine and everything. Blood pressure stayed fine. Everything stayed fine. My blood sugar was a little high at that point. It was like 2 points over like the max that they want it to be. So my husband ran down to the gift shop and got me some trail mix and some cheese and meat little things. I ate that and they checked my blood sugar again in a little bit and it was back down to a happy, healthy, normal range. So they weren't concerned. I was like, I'd eaten rice the night before, guys. That's all it was. You check my blood sugar in the middle of the night after I had rice. Of course, it's going to be a little high. So at this point, it's like 4 a.m. ish. I stayed in bed for the first hour. My doula's like, okay, let's get you out of bed. Let's get you moving. So I was out of bed almost the whole time. I did spend a little bit more time in bed at one point. I had had like the just like initial bolus of medication. That was all I had had. So at this point, like I can feel the contractions are getting stronger, and I can also feel that the medication is like starting to wear off. And it started getting more intense. I was on the toilet for a minute. I was still having an issue where I still could not go pee. And my doula kept feeding me water after every contraction. So that was, they were keeping an eye on that. And like my doula was keeping an eye on that and stuff. It got to about, it was like 8 a.m., I think. So at this point, I've been in labor for a total of like, from the time contractions actually started being painful at about midnight to 8 a.m., it's been 8 hours. I'm on the side of the bed, like leaned over the bed. They have it at my height. My husband's rubbing my back. The nurse is there taking care of me, making sure I'm good. And all of a sudden, she's like, okay, honey, I think it's time to get you back in the bed. And I'm like, what? And she's like, we got to get you back in the bed. The noises you're making, the way you're squatting down, we got to get you back in bed. Because there's like every contraction, it was like bearing down.
And they just didn't want you pushing standing up, type of a thing.
I think they wanted to check me and see how I was doing and everything. And like they had me on continuous monitoring, which initially I didn't really want, but up until that point, I hadn't minded the monitors. It was just at that point because like I kept moving and I was so sweaty. I was so sweaty. My IV kept slipping off, the monitors kept slipping off, my gown was drenched, my hair was drenched. They kept retaping my IV, and I was like, can you please just take the IV out? It's bugging me. And at that point, the IV was like somehow like more painful than the labor. Like I was coping with labor, but like I kept feeling the IV in my arm because they kept having to like poke it and mess with it and stuff because it wasn't staying in. They ended up leaving it in, which I was kind of annoyed with, but like I wasn't really like, I was in and out of it at that point. So they get me back in the bed and they check me and they're like, okay, it's you're already kind of starting to push. Like, let's get the doctor in here. Let's do this. So I'm on the bed. I've got the squat bar. So I'm up on the bed on the squat bar. I've got like kind of kneeling in like a lunge position. I've got one knee up, one knee down. Every contraction, they were having me switch my knees, which started getting really uncomfortable for me. I felt so heavy. And like I was falling asleep in between each contraction, it felt like. And like I wasn't all the way there. But they ended up saying my son's heart rate was dropping just a little bit. And they were like, okay, let's get him out. Let's move this along. So they pulled the squat bar out and they had me on my back, but I wasn't flat. I was like, the bed was propped up. I was like kind of upright. And they had me holding my own legs. And I was like having a hard time because I was so sweaty that my hands kept slipping off the back of my thighs. And they were like, okay, you need to push. Let's push. And I wasn't really listening to them. They were kind of trying to do coach pushing, but like if I didn't feel like it, I just wasn't really doing what they were telling me. I was more listening to my doula than anything else because I felt like I trusted her and like what she was saying more than anything else, you know? So I told them, I was like, I feel like it's pulling up. I feel like it's pulling up. And they're like, okay, lower your legs a little bit, which it was really nice that I was able to like feel everything. So I put my legs down a little bit and that helped a little bit. I don't know exactly how many pushes it was. I don't know if anybody counted, but it ended up being like 13 minutes that I pushed for from like the time they got me in the bed and were like, okay, you're pushing to like, let's get you on your back, give a couple good pushes. I think it was like two pushes once I was on my back and he was out.
Wow, that's awesome.
He came right out. I had a small right interlabial tear, no perineal tears. And then it kind of, I don't think it tear actually tore up, but like I noticed I was kind of sore afterwards, like up towards like my urethra. But they ended up only giving me one stitch on my right labia. So that was fine. They did like numbing shots and everything for that. And like I could feel the numbing shots and everything. And I didn't like that. That was the, you know, it pokes, it's uncomfortable. But it was fine. I felt fine. I felt good. They put him right onto my abdomen because his cord was so short that they couldn't put him any further up. And I wish that they would have waited just a little longer to cut his cord, but they were like, we need to, yeah, he's like hanging out down here where we need to be, you know, because the cord was so short, which makes sense why, like, he was head down the entire pregnancy and didn't move. He stayed right there. He'd kind of flip, like rotate
Sounds
where,
worse.
like sideways, like he'd kind of put like his butt out sometimes and then put his butt toward the back sometimes, but that was all he would do. His head was in my pelvis the entire time. So he comes out. Once they cut his cord, they moved him up to my chest and everything, and they got me cleaned up and everything, and everything was fine. And I got my golden hour, and he didn't want a nurse right away, but he was fine. And they were kind of like taking bets, like, does he look like he's over 6 pounds or what? And he ended up only being 5 pounds, 5 ounces.
Wow, tiny.
Little tiny guy. He was barely 18 inches. And I had him right at 38 weeks. So he was a little small. He was kind of closer to the
Temporarily.
size of like a 35 week baby.
But he had
But
IUGR, so.
I don't think there was anything wrong with him. I think I'm a very small person, and I think my first baby was too big because when I look at pictures, my daughter's head was kind of coned off to the side, and I know that she did not have room to move around in there. Like she was stuck where she was stuck.
That
She
would
was
mean she had, it
so,
was like asynclitic, probably. Her
yeah,
head
she
was
was,
coming down wrong.
yeah, which is probably why it hurt so bad, and I know that now initially to start with even an early labor. But I don't think she had any, I don't. Even once I had had an epidural with her, they were using the peanut ball. They were changing my positions. They were doing all the things, and she wasn't coming down any further, and she wasn't moving, and I wasn't going past a seven. I think that she was too big, which I think is from having unchecked gestational diabetes. Even though she was considered an, like, quote unquote, average size baby, I'm not an average size person. I'm really, really, really small. So, me having a 5 pound, 5 ounce baby seems about right. He came out perfectly healthy. There was nothing wrong with him. His blood sugars were good. His blood pressures were good. Everything was great. And now at 7 months, he's still slightly on the smaller side, but he went from being in like the second or third percentile, whatever he was born into, all the way up to like above the 20th. So he's
Yeah.
almost caught up.
Good.
He's healthy, he's chunky. So th there wasn't actually anything going on with him. And I think that that says a lot to the fact that, like, I'm just really small, and my first baby was n not was the result of an unhealthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't have a postpartum hemorrhage. I didn't need any kind of
Yay.
extra medication. I didn't need Pitocin. I didn't need a full. I didn't end up getting a full epidural. So the I told
Right.
the when they asked me about my experience, I made sure to tell them that the anesthesiologist should choose his words more wisely. It went well, and I waited
Yeah.
like 2 months afterwards to see how I was feeling and everything. And I do not have postpartum depression.
Good.
No more anxiety than I regularly deal with. I have had a
Good.
great time. Everything is just completely different. And my son is only 7 months old, and I'm already at a point where I'm like, I want another baby. And I don't know if I'll actually have another one or not. I mean, there's, financial reasons to consider, and I
Life,
mean, actually
yeah.
giving birth to another baby and raising another human. It's not just, a baby. It's a whole
Yeah.
nother life. It's a lot,
Yeah.
but I have baby fever already. I would absolutely do it again. And I just had him. I
Oh, that makes me so happy. I am so happy that you had such a better experience that was more healing and positive and has left you having a better postpartum for sure.
It was a completely different experience. I mean, night and day. And I'm just
Good.
trying to make sure that I didn't miss anything. So I think the only thing that ended up being different was, like I mentioned, was I couldn't really go pee. So
Oh yeah.
I did end up having to have a catheter at the end
Straight
of my
cath.
labor. Yeah, once they had moved me to recovery, and that was my choice. The nurses didn't push forward or anything. I felt like my bladder was going to explode. I knew how much water I had drank.
Yeah.
I tried so hard. I waited a little bit and it wasn't working. So I ended up having a catheter, but I felt fine about that. And I'm
Yeah.
glad that I did it because I felt better afterwards. And then, like, I went back to normal after that. I didn't end up having to have anything else done or anything.
Yeah. Well, and that can also help reduce like bleeding, help the uterus contract down. So if you're unable to go to the bathroom after, it really is good to get that released somehow.
Yeah, so I was glad that I did that. My
Yeah.
bladder was really full. I was really uncomfortable, and like anytime I was having like the after cramps or anything, it was like I was like, no, fix this, please. So I stayed in the hospital for the like the 24 hours or whatever it was, and we got sent home, and
Much better than 7 days.
yeah, everything
Yeah.
was fine.
Oh. Oh, that makes my heart so happy for you that you were able to have that healing, redemptive experience with positivity and people surrounding you and talking to you and including you in your birth and you being able to make the choices for you and your baby, and people not just coming in and doing things. Like it just. Yeah, and had a much better prenatal care experience for sure.
Yes, it was wonderful. And I mean, even just seeing the OB, because where I'm at, the OBs don't deliver at the hospital. It's the on-call doctor at the hospital either way.
Yeah.
So my OBs had to defer to the specialists. And then no matter what, I got the on-call doctor. But I did end up
Yeah.
getting the on-call midwife. So I was,
Awesome.
it felt kind of nice. I mean, I don't know how much of a difference it would have made, but she was really nice. And it felt nice to have, like, midwife delivery after
Yeah.
wanting to have midwives the first time. So,
Originally.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you again for sharing your stories and congratulations. And here's to a happy postpartum and maybe later down the road, baby number three.
Maybe we'll see. Thank you for
Thank
having me.
you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data, for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
Free with the VBAC link.